Accession number 19533, Reel 3.
Ron Dixon, Reel 3.
And in this house, the Germans had evidently couldn't have got out of it, and probably the day before. And it was really nice inside, and the lovely crockery they had, and pans and everything. And there was plenty of food in it. There was the fridge there was full of food. And so, of course, we ate really well for quite some time. Well, a few days. And then from Osnabrück, we're on our way again. Mostly through country we're going, and quite a lot of skirmishes with the Germans. Shelling, and one particular... And I was with the Colonel Darling. I was his wireless operator, and we was with the 4th Guards armoured tanks, and I was in a scout car with Colonel Darling, the guard captain, and his driver. There was four of us on this scout car, and their tanks were following us most of the way.
What was Darling like to work for?
Lovely. He was a great man. Very kind man. And he was a good doing it. He was so brave, you know, that see him, Colonel Darling there, and directing the this guard's captain for his tanks, where to go and to drop his companies off, and where did he be pointed out that there's troops over there, they're fighting over there, they've seen the flashes over there, and of course we'd be round there, and of course we used to meet quite a lot of Germans, and this was most of the way going up. The next thing it was before a place called Cell, that's C-E-L-L-E, Cell ESL, before there, and we was at the side of this road, and it was like a crossroads, and there's people kept coming down in like striped pyjamas, and we wondered what it all was. You see, they were mostly Russians and other nationalities, and evidently they were all coming from the concentration camp at... one of the main ones.
Belsen.
We weren't far away from Belsen, and in fact, it was the Paras, not our battalion, but the Paras who relieved Belsen, who first went into there. And also, another thing, at the prisoner of war camp there at. Forget that, the name of that place there, but I one of the blokes I used to work with at Harrogate and with the Ministry of Defence, he was a prisoner of war there, and he knew that the Paras released him from there, and he used to tell them all at work. He said, "Ron Dixon here, release me from Falkenbrow, I think it was."
Fallenbuster.
Released us from there, you see, which I didn't, personally. But he would have it, you see.
What did these Belsen inmates look like?
Well, they were terrible. They were terrible. That I've never seen people, like skin and bones, being able to walk. It was sickening just to see them. And there's quite a number, and as we went on from there. Oh, but another little incident apart from these chappies coming along, who they were. There was a German spotter plane kept coming up and down like our Lysander. It was a German spotter plane, and it came up and down this road for I don't know how many times, and everybody seemed to fire at it and miss. So it was unbelievable. I'd seen a bloke with a Bren gun there firing at it as it coming down and missed the thing, you know, that, and with rifle, you understand, the chance, because it wasn't high, you know, it roofed up out some of the times it was coming down. But evidently taking photographs, you see, and that was that. But nobody shot it down.
Did you speak to any of the Belson people?
Only one guy that, and he said he was Ruski. He said he was a Russian. And he said that it was at Belson, you see, and it terrible, you know, we could see it. But we knew very little then of what was going on. We didn't know Belson. Didn't mean a thing to us. Never even heard of it, Belson, or what, any of the others.
Were people giving them things?
Of course, that they was more or less, all they wanted was cigarettes, you see. So, I mean, to say we couldn't supply them with anything, only cigarettes. That's all we had. Or what bit of chocolate or sweets or something like that. Because we wouldn't have food. But whether our, with our cooks or anything like that. But of course they weren't there, you know, on the doing. So from there, we went into Celle. Now, I thought it was a beautiful city. In fact, swimming, the main river going through the centre of the town was done out as a swimming pool. In the centre of it, flowed through. And there was changing rooms and everything there. We found this, and I thought, God, I'd swum in rivers before, in Germany and in France, and but here was doing, and the weather was picking up as well. It was getting April. And I thought, oh, first in, dived off, all clothes off and in the water. Thought, oh, it's great, this. And there, in Celle, We met quite a number of Yugoslavs, all nationalities in there, and they always appeared to have the booze. So we got organised with them, and we had one or two drinks with them and all that. But they got a bit of rowdy, and I thought, well, could see trouble coming off with these people. They weren't very friendly, and...
They weren't very friendly to the British?
No. They weren't very friendly to us, you see, that even though, you know, first started, but I'd seen them, you know, pick fights and things like that. So, how long we was in Celle, I don't know, but we didn't appear to be long there. And I think we had, we'd billeted in houses there. And, of course, it was getting, and then... From there, we went up to, on the way to Lunenburg Heath. And this is where we first heard, more or less, we knew that the war was finishing. And, before that, we were going to do a jump over the river Elbe. I'm sure it was the Elbe. We were going to do a jump over the Elbe, because evidently the Russians were there. And the Germans, you see, and I think that it was more or less political, this, that we were going to do to get there before the Russians. So we didn't do it, it was cancelled, thank goodness, you see, but we were going back because the CO told us we were going to pick chutes up, then go, but we didn't. So off we went, back in, we always had transport, so most of the time we had out of the tanks. But I think the tanks must have left us then, and we was just using transport, our own transport. So I can remember by the river, we were by this river when we heard that the war was finished, you see, and we were going up to a place called Wismar, which was on the Baltic. And on the last few days, as we were going up, we started seeing all the Germans coming in, prisoners, hundreds of them, all prisoners, you know, and they didn't know what to do, and of course we pushed them on, then back. And then after we got, our own planes came over and strafed us. I think we had a few killed on the last day of the war, that, and we had yellow recognition flags, scarf type of thing, which we was using all the time, but our planes came over quite a lot, and we couldn't let them know, you know, that we were British and all that, but they came and strafed us, and that was a bit, because I was near one route when they came down, and we was in the field laying down there. And anyhow.
Was that the RAF?
The RAF, yeah. Anyhow, then we got up to Wismar, and we met the Russians there. The Russians were on one side, and we were on the other. And I can always remember Colonel Darling saying to me, he says, we're going to meet the Russians. I am going to meet the Russians. And he said, hey, I want you to come with me, Dixon. I said, right, sir. And off we went in the jeep to doing there, and there was the quite a number of high-ranking officers there. There were General Bowles, and there was Brigadier Poet, Nigel Poet, and a lot more. And General Darling says, come with me, and he said, he said they're having a photograph taken of all us Germans with the Russians, you see. and of course, as soon as I got up with him there, off to me. And I can remember watching him having this photograph taken with the Russians and all that. Still got it. It's in one of the books.
What impression did the Russians make on you?
Well, they didn't. There was... I thought we were going to start another war there and then with the Russians, because they wanted to do everything. They wouldn't let us do anything, you see. They'd taken it, and the Germans, you know, was they were in charge of them and everything. And there was a camp there where most of the, when I'm saying Germans, the German civilians, you see, in Wismar. And there was quite a number. We had a camp for them. We had tents put up, and I should have mentioned about the 400 or 500 German civilians there, and we was there in Wismar for quite some time before we was flown back to England from Lüneburg.
Were the Russians hostile to the British?
Well, I don't think that hostile in the kind of way where they would, you know, use weapons on us. Probably with the voice, they was hostile. They was more or less thinking that they was in charge. And this is only what you could hear. As a private soldier, you heard nothing. They only told you what they wanted to. You to know and all that, so that was fair enough, you know. But and we had a V night, more or less, in where we got plenty of red wine, and you got everything, and we had a carnival kind of thing, horsing. Colonel Darling was a horseman. You see that him and his batman was a, one of the batmen was a, Porteous was a jockey, so it was mostly, you know, horse riding, horse racing. We had quite a good do on there, and we had quite a good day and evening on that. A good boozle, one might say. But and that was that, and then we came back to England. We came straight back to England from Lüneburg, trucks to Lüneburg, and then on the plane there to England. Yeah, definitely, I'm sure we came straight back. No, we didn't. We came back to Belgium. Forget where it was now, but a little incident there. There was a crashed plane on the runway. We had to fly around for a couple of hours. So that was our doing. And anyhow, we finally got home. And we were there for, that'd be May, end of the war there, May. We was there for some time, and then we went out to... came back to England, and it would be about July, end of July, and we sailed for, we're going to the Far East, we knew that, and we were the only brigade out of the Div, it was the 5th Para Brigade, to go to Malaya. We knew what our objective would be, was to, they told us this before we went, we were going out to India, Bombay, and a place called Kalyan, and from there we would emplane, be going on the ship, I think it was the Chitral, and we would be going out to Malaya, and from Malaya we would be taking the airfield at Port Dickson, and from there we would be kitted out and we were going to do a drop on Singapore Island. So we knew that, we were briefed for it, and on the ship we heard that, we knew this on the ship. We thought, we got together, we were chatting and everybody, Singapore Island, the Japs, just this brigade. I thought, you know, we're not going to last. None of us are coming back off this little ship out there. We knew that, you know, that it, anybody with any sense could see that, you know. Anyhow, we got to, on the ship, they dropped the atom bomb. And we heard then that there's a possibility that it would be off. So we got to Malaya, and we got off the ship in Malaya, and we waded ashore, and we went as far as, we didn't get as far as the airfield, we didn't get very far off, and I can always remember, we got off, and it just like, I'd have seen a photograph of it, and it just looked like... And that was the invasion of Mare. And it, somebody said to me, wait, there's all these people swimming around. And there was the people taking it off the landing boats, you see. There was our own doing, helping them off there. But it just looked as though they were swimming in the Caribbean or somewhere. But we got off and we did this little tramp ashore to... what we thought was probably the airfield, what we would have taken. But, of course, all that was cancelled. And we bivouacked for the night. That was just ground sheets, a little tent. And I've never seen it rain. It bucketed down. It absolutely threw it down. Monsoon rains, it must have been. But we were absolutely soaked to the skin because we was only sheltering under ground sheets. And so, anyhow... we was able to dry, it's quite sunny hot, you know, it'd be in the 80s, and we got dried, and we got back to the boats again, and then we sailed into Singapore, and we took over the Changi Jail in Singapore, that was full of Japanese, and they were a bit aggressive as well, mostly these 6-foot Japanese. And
Way were they aggressive?
You know that they were going to told them to do something, and they were more or less going to fight. You see, they've done just that. We could have done, but they didn't care. Anyhow, we took over Changi Jail, and in Changi Jail was only, we had all the top Japanese, out of the Japanese army, the generals and everybody, and they was all put in the cells there in the jail itself. And we used to just, didn't do a lot in Singapore. We used to just guard them, you know, but they had a battalion there to guard them. So we didn't have many duties to do in Changi Jail. And we used to do mostly swimming around Singapore. But what they started to do there, on whose authority I don't know, but they started to take these Japanese prisoners onto the beaches and shoot them, stake them, down to a stake, and shoot them. This was soon stopped. I don't think they did more than a couple, but it soon stopped, and they sent out Pierpoint, who was the official hangman in this country, and they sent out to him to train four hangsmen in the battalion to carry out the hanging. And they built scaffolds there, you see, to carry out the hanging in the prison. And that is what happened, that most of the Japanese generals and top brass of the Japanese army were hung there in Changi Jail.
Were you present at any of the...
I was never present at any of the hanging, but I used to walk down the cells most mornings on one of my duties, you see, and you could see all these in just more or less the generals used to be only dressed in a loincloth, no uniform, just in a loincloth, and they'd be sat in the jail, in the cell, just sat there in a loincloth, and I thought it was pathetic, really. And anyhow, that's the way it was, and that's the way that they were taken out and hung.
Did you feel sorry for them?
Not really, no, because they did such a, you know, a lot of atrocities, and you could feel sorry for them, you know, that they were degrading, you thought, for them, you know, and it was for them that they would have liked to have been in their uniforms and that, as that's how it ran, and it was signed, the capitulation was signed in Singapore at Changi, I believe, because I think now they have the big photograph there of all the British top brass and the Japanese, where it was signed over there.
Do you think they were put into loincloths to humiliate them?
I don't know, I should imagine so. I thought it was funny myself, you know, why they should be like that. You wouldn't have thought they were, you know, soldiers. Singapore. That from Changi Jail, we went then to Batavia, which was a Dutch possession. But there was nobody, no Dutch troops out there to take over. So politically, that we was given the job of our battalion of taking over the Japanese that were left on the island of Batavia, Semarang. Batavia. And of course, we went there, and Indonesia, as it was in those days, Indonesia. Take over Indonesia. Batavia was the capital. And we took over the place itself there, and there was loads of Dutch people, civilians, who'd been interned there, quite hundreds of them. Had been interned there, you see, and of course we used to have to look after them in food and everything like that, find them accommodation until the Dutch government could take over. Indonesia.
What condition were they in?
They were in very bad, you know, terrible. They were thin, scrawny. Most of them, you know, good-looking women there that... no men, all ladies, all women.
Was the battalion doing any fighting in Java?
Well, we used to, yes. We used to, what they used to call Kampong clearing, was that, but this was only the, I think, from the element of Dutch and Malay people who were running there, you know, that, and I think that was only political, you see, on the people who were left there trying to run the country. I forget the name of the bloke who was in charge out there, Dutch, and Indonesia.
Did you go out on Kampong clearing yourself?
Oh yes, many a time, and that with and you'd find out that, and it wasn't against the Japanese; it was against their own people. You see, we had a prison there that was practically full of these leftists, you know, that were a lot in the Far East, and then they were taking over more or less, as in Malaya itself, Singapore, and there was a lot of trouble after the war with the Japanese out there, that with the Russians, you see, that...
What did the Kampong clearing involve?
The Kampongs were villages, kind of thing, and they were being infiltrated by all these people, you know, if you get the name of what they were. They were Dutch Malay or Dutch Indonesians. It's Indonesia, so they'd be Indonesians that had for their country, you see. But they was on the Russian side, you know, to take over then.
So when you went into a village, what would happen?
Well, but they'd all scar them by the time... Every time we went into a village, there's nobody there. All you used to see was these civilians there, who they were mostly women, planting rice in the swamp lands, you know, that's what they were doing. But we never actually had to fight any of them, not to my knowledge. Possibly, don't forget, I was signal platoon, so more or less we'd only be going for communications.
So you went in to arrest people, but you couldn't arrest anybody because they'd all gone?
Mostly it was like that. See, on the ones that I went on, there was nobody there.
Did you like your time in Java or not?
I thought it was, we had a good time there because we swam a lot. Lovely beaches in Java. And the food was good. And of course, there was, we got issued with Dutch guilds.